Thank you for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly hour-long news report, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs coverage from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Alex DeBoer.
And I'm Aiden Tong. It's Thursday, December 21st at 5:08 p.m. We're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Today we discuss a statement made on December 11th by Mayor Gregor Robinson, where he conflated the burning of an Israeli flag with an assault committed against a Muslim woman. We hear a response to this statement from David Mivasser, a rabbi and member of the human rights group Independent Jewish Voices of Canada. We then turn to a protest that took place this past Saturday in opposition to real estate development company Westbank and their public art campaign, The Fight for Beauty. But first, headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland.
Vancouver police make additional arrests as part of a new project to curtail home break-ins and theft. Vancouver police arrest four people this month after they allegedly broke into homes in Burnaby. The arrests come following the creation of Project Lookout, a project launched last month by the Vancouver Police Department after several residents reported their homes were ransacked and personal items were stolen. According to a representative of VPD, suspects were circling neighborhoods looking for potential targets. They would knock on the door and when no one answered, would forcefully enter the homes. Over $100,000 worth of property value has been recovered in related search warrants as part of the Project Lookout.
13-year-old boy accidentally sets fire in a West Vancouver building. Firefighters were left battling a blaze late last evening when an apartment building on 1766 Francis Street near Commercial Drive caught fire. The blaze started on the third floor of the building from a unit that was occupied by a woman and her three children. The woman, named Cheryl, said that her 13-year-old son accidentally started the fire when he lit a match that fell on a big bag of laundry.
Vancouver could be preparing for a white Christmas this year. Vancouver Weather Agency Canada forecasts a 60% chance that snow will fall on Christmas Eve on Sunday. There's also a 40% chance of snow flurries on Christmas Day. Temperatures on the following Monday could hover around negative 5 degrees Celsius. And those were the headlines for Thursday, December 21st. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a short break and return to learn more about a statement made by Mayor Gregor Robertson in response to the burning of an Israeli flag at a pro-Palestine protest 2 weekends ago. Stay tuned.
For rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
Let's see here, God. Oh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
And there ain't a single nother soul around. I wanna dig into my guitar, bend the blues riff that hangs over everything.
I'm by myself and it's daytime, cause down under, oh, wherever it is I live when it's evening. You know I speed read the morning news and come up with my own little song.
About all the other things, like a big old ominous cloud in my periphery. I inhabit a high-pitched ring over things. So these days I plug them up.
When I'm struggling with my songs, I do the same thing too. And I crunch them up in headphones, cause why wouldn't you? You could say I hear you on several levels at high decibels. Over everything.
And we're back. My name is Alex DeBoer, and this is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. We are now turning to a follow-up on Vancouver's pro-Palestine protests in response to America's decision to move their embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. News Collective member Rema Tulashek explains.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
On December 21st, Mayor Gregor Robertson issued a public statement saying, and I quote, Recently, we have seen a number of incidents take place in Vancouver that threatens the inclusivity and safety of our city. From the burning of an image of the Israeli flag in protest to the Jerusalem debate this weekend, to the violent and unprovoked attack of a Muslim woman riding the SkyTrain last week, to some graffiti featuring hateful and anti-Chinese racial slurs and swastikas in Marpol. End quote. The city says that they have received both positive and negative response to the statement that I just read out. Conservative Jewish advocacy group B'nai B'rith, who were interviewed in a CTV article covering pro-Palestinian protests the weekends earlier, have reacted positively to the statement, posting the same statement on their Facebook page. Palestinian human rights advocates, on the other hand, have responded negatively. In response, they have encouraged their community and supporters to send a letter to Mayor Gregor Robertson expressing their outrage. Now, this issue has been made contentious by the fact that the mayor's statement can be interpreted to equate the burning of a flag to the physical assault of Noor Fadhel, the Muslim woman who was recently attacked on a Vancouver SkyTrain. In their letter, the Palestinian human rights activists explained that flag burning is a legal freedom of expression in Canada and is in no way equivalent to hate speech or discrimination. They say that the Israeli flag is representative of the state of Israel and not of Jewish people. Democracy Watch reached out to the mayor's office for comment, but they said they were unavailable. Today, I interviewed Rabbi David Miviser. He's a rabbi and a member of the human rights group Independent Jewish Voices. David has reached out to the mayor for a meeting regarding his problematic position on equating a hate crime to burning an Israeli flag. Take a listen. Voices, can you tell us a little bit about that organization and what is your role in it?
Okay, well, it's a national Canadian human rights organization that advocates for the application of international law and human rights in Israel and Palestine as a way to resolve the conflict there. And we have chapters all across Canada. It's an organization of Jewish people. And my role is simply I'm a member of the Vancouver chapter.
So what is the position of the Independent Jewish Voices on the latest Trump decision on moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
You can ask me my position. So personally, I think it's a huge mistake for the U.S. to do that. It reinforces Israeli domination and subjugation and colonialism. And I also think it's not really going to change anything qualitatively. I think the U.S. has always been very supportive of Israeli domination and oppression and colonialism. So this one change, you know, for Donald Trump to declare that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, it's not a very meaningful change in anything. And I also like to add that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and it has been since the country was established. Mm-hmm. That's where its parliament meets. That's where the president lives. That's where the Supreme Court is. That's where the prime minister is. That's where the government ministries are. So Israel has made Jerusalem its capital. That's in violation of international law and UN decisions. So the U.S. changing its policy to say that it recognizes Jerusalem as Israel's capital is I think it has actually very little real significance. I think people should talk about other issues like the Israeli treatment of Palestinians and continued theft of land, murder of innocent people, denial of rights, expelling people from their homeland. The fact that Donald Trump made another impulsive, foolish decision, which really shouldn't be the focus of our attention.
Yeah, but this still has reverberations across the world and even in Canada. So Gregory Robertson, the mayor of Vancouver, he made a statement recently, and this was referencing to a flag burning incident that took place a couple of weeks back during a pro-Palestinian rally. Now, he you know, in his statement to B'nai B'rith, which is a Jewish advocacy group here, he mentioned that the burning of the Israeli flag during the rally, and he compared this with an unprovoked Islamophobic assault on the SkyTrain, and almost in a way putting these two incidents on the same footing. So do you find this position problematic, and why?
It's absolutely problematic. So he associated it with, I think he said hate. He used three terms, right?
This is part of his longer statement. He said that the city of Vancouver has a zero tolerance policy on hate, racism, and discrimination.
That's not what it was. It was a political rally with a political purpose in a political venue, and people who were aggrieved by the country and the state that flag is a symbol of were provoked by someone bringing that flag there, and they responded, and there was nothing hateful, discriminatory, or racist about that rally. And a member of the National Steering Committee of Independent Jewish Voices was an invited speaker at the rally and spoke that there as a Jew on behalf of us Jewish members. So for the mayor of Vancouver to associate that with racism, hatred, and discrimination, I think he is being misled. I think he probably didn't look into the issue very deeply and probably was influenced by others to make a statement like that. I don't think he would have done that if he had known enough and thought about it well.
So what do you think is the problem with these comparisons, and what does it do to the greater Palestinian question?
Well, I think other people are influencing the mayor to associate support for Palestine and opposition to what Israel does to Palestinians with things like racism, hatred, and discrimination, right? B'nai B'rith, for example, wants to make support for Palestine equivalent to hatred. They do that. And I think the mayor just allowed himself to be deceived. So it's very problematic to associate defending Palestinian rights with racism. It's not racism. And it's also problematic to associate burning an Israeli flag with racism, discrimination, hatred, or anti-Semitism. It's a symbol of a state and a government. It's not a symbol of the Jewish people.
And you've requested a meeting with Mayor Gregory Robertson. What message are you hoping to take to his office?
Well, I want to take the message that Jewish people in the city of Vancouver, like his constituents, that he's our mayor, we have very different perspectives on things. And he really needs to be more cautious and thoughtful and more consultative with the breadth of our community, and not listen to one narrow band of people who have rather extremist ideas.
In reference to the decision to move the embassy, you did mention that this is, in a way, a less significant of an event compared to the larger issues at place. However, just today there has been another development in that. So there has been a vote in the United Nations General Assembly which has overwhelmingly opposed Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Do you have any views on that? Do you see this as a significant move?
It's the same old thing that's been going on for 70 years. So actually, I think it isolates the U.S. It makes the current U.S. regime appear to be unreasonable and unrealistic. You know, for the U.S. to threaten countries that voted against its position is, it's like preposterous. I don't think that position has any legitimacy. Again, I think there's much more substantive, meaningful things that we can do to support Palestinians, and that this whole discussion about whether Trump recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel or not, I think it's a, I think it's like a sideshow.
Just to let you know, so last week we did run almost, we dedicated almost an hour on this Palestinian rally, and we took different viewpoints. One of the people that we spoke to, coincidentally, was Noor Fadl at the Palestinian rally, the same person whose name and whose incident the mayor, in a way, has compared with the flag-burning incident. And we met her at the Palestinian rally. And we asked her a specific question, kind of drawing parallels between what's happening in Palestine and what happened with her. I was wondering if you could listen to this really short portion of the clip and maybe give your reaction, if that's okay.
Okay.
So you're at a Palestinian rally, and do you see some parallels between standing up for human dignity and with your own story?
For sure. You know, I wanted to come out here and support just as people were supporting me. You know, this isn't just about Palestine. This isn't just about the Muslim people. This isn't just about me. It wasn't an attack just on me. It was on all minorities, really. And, you know, we live in a diverse city, and we really have to just be kind to one another and to respect each other, no matter what faith, no matter what religion, no matter what race or what our beliefs are in the end. You know, we live side by side with each other, so it's better to become a community rather than everyone kind of going against each other.
That was a portion of the clip. What is your reaction to Noor's answer? We kind of find this interesting because we in a way made this comparison between Palestine and her issue, except that the mayor took the flag burning incident and conflated it with what happened with her on SkyTrain.
I think she is exactly right. I appreciate what she said. Again, I think the mayor, I mean, I could use the word manipulated. I think the mayor was really misled by people and allowed himself to do that because perhaps he thinks that there would be some political gains to him in adopting those people's agenda. I don't think if he gave this any thought, he would say that.
We were just wondering, this was the Israeli flag which was burned at the square. Now, if this was a different flag, let's say if this was the American flag and someone directed their anger towards an American flag instead of an Israeli flag, do you think the mayor's response would have been different, or would he have been pressured into giving a similar reaction and statement?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I can't imagine that he would respond to the burning of an American flag the same way. That's a very good question. I don't know anything. I don't think this was the mayor's initiative. I don't think the mayor personally is committed to what he said. I don't know this. It seems to me the kind of thing that the mayor would do in response to being asked to do that by people who have influence with him. It could be that if someone were to burn an American flag or an Argentinian flag or, you know, the Papua New Guinea flag, and somebody came to him and said, "Oh, mayor, please, would you condemn that they burned our flag?" Maybe he would. But I don't think he would associate it with racism, hatred, and discrimination. He would probably keep it in the realm of political activity, which it is.
Yeah, you did start off this conversation by saying that the mayor should be speaking to the breadth of the community. There is a wide range of opinions out there.
That's right.
Can you tell us what has been the response of the Jewish community in Vancouver to the recent decision on Jerusalem?
Well, you know, the Jewish community is very diverse in its views. Most people I know either think it's a mistake, you know, or that it's not very significant. I know there have been, I've seen reports of polls in the U.S. that show that the majority of Jews think that the U.S. should not recognize Israel, I mean, Jerusalem as a capital. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I could look that up for you. That's not Vancouver. Nobody's done a poll here.
Yep.
I hear what you're asking me, but I mean, actually, you know, there's great diversity of opinion. I think most Jews don't have strong opinions about this and don't see what Trump is doing as particularly meaningful. I think most Jews here see Trump as a erratic, impulsive, irresponsible person who somehow accidentally got into power. And what he and his government are doing isn't really very significant, and it's not going to last very long. But I don't think many Jewish people here see this as either a great triumph or a great problem.
Rabbi, we've spoken a lot about the problems that are plaguing this whole issue, but hopefully to leave on a more optimistic note, what can the Palestinians and the Jews of Vancouver do together in a way to move forward from this whole issue and in a way try and reconcile their differences?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what we can do as Canadians is work with our own government. We have no control over the U.S. But as Canadians, we need to let our government know where it should stand. So, for example, today the government of Canada abstained from the vote in the United Nations.
Yep.
Right? And I think we should let our prime minister know that that's not good enough. They should have voted against it, right? And there are many other instances where we can help the government of Canada do better than it's doing. Like Canada gives something like $30 million a year of aid to the Palestine Authority, and nearly all of it is used for the security apparatus to just keep the Palestine Authority in control and to suppress Palestinian political expression. There's a lot that we can do as Canadians. I'm very encouraged that now the NDP has a new leader who speaks in a direct, forthright way about Palestine. Until now, the NDP hasn't done that. So rather than talk about the U.S., let us as Canadians, you know, move our own government on that issue and try to do better with that. I'd like to add something else. I mean, besides governments and policies, we can do a lot to directly support Palestinians. Palestinian daily life is so difficult. So our organization just had a fundraiser to buy small handheld solar-powered lamps for people in Gaza, because there's 2 million people in Gaza living in the dark at night because Israel's depriving them of electricity. So while we work on the big picture, government policies and things like that, there's a lot that we can do to just support Palestinians in their daily life, you know, and that's something certainly the Jews, Palestinians, and all of us can get behind to try to help people in a very direct way.
Well, thank you so much for speaking to us, Rabbi, and hopefully you're taking the right messages to the mayor. And we'd be very interested in knowing what exactly was the outcome of that meeting and what did you hear from the mayor?
Well, we've been told that we will have a meeting with him in January.
Well, January of the new year, and hopefully this will be a new path for the peace process. That was David Miviser, rabbi and member of the Independent Jewish Voices. We're going to go into a short break, and we have a special interview coming on the other side, so stay tuned.
Go to a party with me?
No, the game's on.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'll be right there.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl.
Do you like sports and don't care who knows? Then CITR Sports needs you. If you like sports, are into radio, or generally just want to have a great time, then come join us. Email our sports coordinator at sports101@citr.ca to find out more, or come by the station in the new sub. See you soon.
Watch, because I'm the man.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say?
Or have a topic to share?
We have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niska from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory?
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualcomm and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quechua indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about, we're into it.
Everyone is welcome, no experience necessary. Unceded Airwaves airs Mondays from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unceded Airwaves.
We want to hear your story.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
A spire of itself shining unapologetically amidst a tired gallery of sameness. Proof against this belief we must settle for living without the wonder it provides. For the sculptor, it hides inside the rock. For the musician, it thunders upon the drum. For some, it plays atop the tongue, because our eyes are not the only parts of us hungry for what it offers. Our skin, too, is ravenous for its touch. Warm, cool, smooth, rough. It is polish against the scuff of dullness our lives become without it. So we shout it to the world and we whisper it to our hearts. We rest it against the parts of us that ache and the wounds we wish to heal. And when we reach for it, it reaches back and touches us. Through the way it makes us feel.
Hello, this is Democracy Watch. You just heard a clip from a promotional video for a luxury real estate development company, Westbank. Westbank is currently hosting a public exhibition that is a melding of architecture and art called The Fight for Beauty. Last Saturday, December 16th, Melody Ma and members of the Vancouver Tenants Union, Chinatown Action Group, Housing Action for Local Taxpayers, and others held an alternative tour and protest at Westbank's Fight for Beauty exhibition outside the Fairmont Pacific Rim Hotel. They have called on artists from Vancouver and across Canada to refuse commissions and to stop working with Westbank. Today we have with us Melody Ma. Melody is an activist and the creator of website parodying Westbank's Fight for Beauty campaign called The Real Fight for Beauty. She is also a past member of the City of Vancouver's Arts and Culture Policy Council. Welcome to Democracy Watch, Melody.
Thank you.
Could you start out by telling us what happened at the Westbank protest this Saturday?
I think it actually all started when many people, artists, myself, saw throughout the city, whether we were in transit or just around the city, you saw these hot pink signage saying Fight for Beauty screaming at you, and it turns out to be Westbank's brand saturation campaign to position themselves as a culture company. So what happened this last weekend was around 30 to 40 artists, activists, neighborhood activist types all came together and said, enough is enough. We can't let a luxury condo real estate developer, Westbank, define what the fight for beauty is, what beauty is in the city. We need to take that narrative back. And what happened was we started off with an alternative tour of all the exhibits within the Fight for Beauty exhibition. And then we ended up, after we actually were asked to leave, we had a rally outside, which received great feedback by a lot of people who came out, as well as people who were passing by.
Cool. So the protest took form as an alternative tour. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yep. So if you haven't been to the Fight for Beauty exhibition yet, once you go in, you're given an audio tour where you actually have the CEO of Westbank, Ian Gillespie, narrate each of the exhibits in the exhibition. The exhibits are actually a collection of a retrospective from the Westbank's collection of their condo mottos around Vancouver as well as throughout Canada. It also includes pieces from their, I believe, their fashion collection, I think they have one, their art collection, I think they also have a film collection, and also pieces from different artists that they've worked with. So what we were focused on were the pieces where they were condo mottos, architectural models, as well as the pieces of art. The one that I focused on was the Vancouver House. Ian Gillespie talks about his fight for beauty at the Vancouver House. The beauty, of course, is the Vancouver House. The fight, he defined it as the issues he had to go through to consolidate the land, the issues he had to go through to put this bourgeois chandelier underneath the Granville Bridge, the issues he had to go through to figure out how to put more density on a postage stamp sized lot. So I provided an alternative narrative on what the Vancouver House is actually about. You know, the way the Vancouver House is structured, where the top is smaller than the bottom, is not because it's an architectural masterstroke. It's because it allows Westbank to get more density, which means more returns. The reason why we have public art underneath the Granville Street Bridge, where he says that they want to have local artists, young artists, to put in art in light boxes underneath the bridge, that will only increase the value, property value, of the people who will buy into the Vancouver House versus the actual benefits that the young local artists will receive at the end of the day. So it's really to point out the hypocrisy of the exhibit and start taking the narrative back.
Right. That's very interesting. So Westbank is sort of selling culture, not just condos. Like, that's what this campaign is all about. Would you say that's a good summary of it?
Yeah, I think that they are trying to brand themselves as a culture company instead of a condo company. There's even a line on their website where they state that we take on the role of patron of culture and distribute it globally.
I mean, there you go.
If you dissect that line, you know, what are they actually talking about? What are they distributing globally? They're not distributing art. They're not, you know, the Tate Modern. What they're actually doing is taking their luxury condos that they've dressed up with a Starchitect's design and sprinkled with some public art, and then selling it to offshore buyers. They have offshore sales departments in, I believe, Singapore, maybe even in Hong Kong, I believe. And so they're not a culture company. I think someone actually joked to me that they're not a culture company, but a vulture company.
Oh, yes. I think I saw that quote. That's amazing. Great. So we're just going to play a clip from the alternative tour, which you just described, where you are talking about some of these designs, and they're kind of blending with art. So we'll just hear a clip of that, and then we'll get your comments.
But this wasn't some ingenious masterstroke. It is essentially, I mean, like, call it what it is. They are able to pack more density using this form than if they were to do it the other way, so that they can earn more returns on their investments. I mean, this is the epitome of form that follows finance. Gillespie also says that he had this vision of not just one Vancouver house, but two Vancouver houses, so Vancouver House 2. And he had this vision that these two Vancouver houses will be like giant curtains that peel back the peninsula to the world and the world back to Vancouver. I mean, this really poses a question around city building of who gets to determine how Vancouver is presented to the world, who gets to determine what should be on a gateway site that place marks, you know, Vancouver.
All right, and we're back. So we just listened to a clip from Saturday's protest at West Bank Fight for Beauty exhibit outside the Fairmont Hotel, and that was Melody Ma leading an alternative tour of the exhibit. So I'm interested in you telling us or talking a bit about the language Ian Gillespie uses to describe his perspectives on beauty and development. Can you elaborate a bit more on your sort of satirical comments about, you know, using the term curtaining to describe certain features and using art to defend building density?
Yep. I think that they're trying hard to give this facade that they are a culture company by using the language, the vocabulary that you'll see at an art gallery or that artists would use, and then apply it to what they're good at, which is developing luxury condos. But what they're really doing is co-opting arts, co-opting the language, co-opting even what the meaning of a fight for beauty is. I mean, for Ian Gillespie, when you listen to his narration, his fight for beauty is three things. One, financial risks. Two, risks of his reputation within his industry and what his peers think of him if a project fails. Three, bureaucracy, and when he doesn't get his way with the city or with the neighborhood. Those are the fight for beauty, and his beauty that he defines is what you see at the in the exhibition. But the real fights for beauty are actually by people in neighborhoods, by people in the downtown east side or in Chinatown or in Joyce, long-standing communities who are seeing themselves, their neighbors, being priced out due to affordability issues that are perpetuated by these luxury condos and developments that real estate companies like West Bank are putting into their neighborhoods.
Absolutely. So in that video or that audio clip we played from a video, you asked the question rhetorically, who gets to determine who creates Vancouver? So what would you say to the criticism that your hope for an affordable Vancouver is idealistic because of Vancouver's appeal as a place to live, both in Canada and internationally?
I think government has failed us. I think even in a way we failed each other as Vancouverites. I remember a few years ago, before where we are right now, having a coffee with someone where they were saying, you know, in Vancouver, it's the only place where we talk about real estate as if we were trading hockey cards or as if it was sports. And that's where we are right now. That's the reality that we live in. But we need to stop it. We need to find a way, and we need to find ways to work together to have these dialogues and to actually take action to make sure that people who aren't housed are housed, people who need secure rentals and tenure can find that. And that if you desire to have home ownership, you have the ability to get there. But right now, our governments have failed us, and in a way, we've failed each other. But I'm hopeful that we have realized what it has manifested to, and we can, through activism, whether it's in neighborhoods or through activism for taking back the narrative, for Fight for Beauty, we can point out what is wrong. What role does a real estate developer have? How can we be more cognizant of this practice of art washing when we're citizens, or when you are a bureaucrat, or if you're a politician, and make sure that we start creating and continue to create a livable and affordable city for everyone.
Right. Okay. So inspiring activism seems to be a viable way to create change. When it comes to a company like Westbank, a luxury condo developer company, what can we expect for them to do? Did you and the other activists who were there on Saturday have any demands for them where they can stop gentrifying the city and making it unaffordable and actually allow artists to create their own art and culture? Like, how do you think now they can address creating actual beauty and culture in the city of Vancouver?
I don't think at the protest itself there were any specific demands. I think it was really to provide that alternative narrative, to take back the narrative that Ian Gillespie and Westbank was creating. And I think that is a good first step for artists, for activists, everyone to band together to do that and say no. In terms of how we can go forward, I mean, hopefully this would make everybody more cognizant of what the role of the types of behaviors that Westbank and other luxury real estate developers, or just real estate developers, are doing in general, and how they're using art and going into neighborhoods to, in fact, just gentrify them. And what I think was interesting was when I first started off parodying the Fight for Beauty, I introduced this term art washing during my interviews with other journalists. And I was often asked, is this a new term you created? I've heard greenwashing before, but never heard art washing. But in fact, art washing has been a term that's used in cities like London, like New York, who are that are facing exactly the same issues that we're facing, but yet they are much more culturally rich cities. So I was actually quite surprised that this notion of art washing outside of the arts and culture circles is an unfamiliar term. So hopefully through this activism and protest against the Fight for Beauty, people become more aware of that, and that becomes part of the public discourse, and we have the vocabulary to describe what we're seeing.
Yeah, Melody, I was just wondering, this conflict between the developers and the artist is rather interesting. Does this send a message to the developers that there cannot really be a mix between real estate and art? Or do you think, is there any way developers can really address the main problems of homes and serve the real purpose of offering good, affordable homes, and at the same time integrate art into their philosophy? Or is this like a closed door for them, and they should really just be focusing on doing the bare minimum of addressing the problem of homes?
No, I don't think that this protest is about developers not being able to incorporate arts and culture into their development at all. What it is about is being genuine about your initiatives, about how you approach art and artists, making sure that you incorporate it genuinely as a way to add to the public sphere, to make sure that it's a livable city and you're adding a development that is affordable, that is livable, that makes sure, you know, that you have a bit of creativity. It is in no way saying, no, you can't create developments with art or public art. I mean, that is a common practice that is throughout Vancouver in terms of our public art program. Developers do add and pay into a public art fund, and that's why we get to enjoy all of the public art amenities that we do and have the collection that we do in Vancouver. But what we're saying is be genuine about it. Don't use artists specifically in a way that we all know at the end of the day, once we peel it all back, that is simply for your profits. Do it in a way that is meaningful, that makes sure that you know, the people who are creating the art, the cultural workers, the creative workers, the artists, can afford to live in our city. And often artists are on the lower income portion of the income scale, and developing more luxury condos aren't going to make sure that they have secure places to live and affordable places to live in Vancouver.
Yeah. So you did make your concerns public. There was an open letter addressed to Westbank, and there were a lot of signatories to it. Tell us a little bit about what that open letter was like.
So I wasn't part of the organizing team, especially for the letter. That was actually put together by artists who want to disavow Westbank, who are committed to not work with Westbank or any public art commissions that involve Westbank. It denounces what Westbank is doing and highlights the harmful effects of what their developments, especially in vulnerable neighborhoods, are doing to the citizens of Vancouver, as well as now because they're expanding throughout Canada. It also talks about how Indigenous lands aren't recognized within Westbank's exhibition, that they're an imperialistic company that is continuing the colonial practices by saying that, you know, you have, they can do whatever they want with their land and not recognizing who has been there before them.
Right. Yeah, looking at the other side of the issue, now a lot of the artists and activists who signed that document, that letter to Westbank, and protested against them on Saturday have studios and gallery spaces in Chinatown. What would you say to the criticisms that, in a way, try to say that these artists who signed that open letter and protested against Westbank are also perpetuating gentrification in a way?
I know some of the art studios and artists, and in fact, I've actually even been a board member on the board of a theater company that is in Chinatown. So there are arts organizations that are occupying spaces in Chinatown. But what I find really interesting is that they are the first people that reach out and say, how can we be part of the community? How can we become a safe space for people to have dialogue about the effects of gentrification, that we can have that human-to-human exchange? So I would call some of the people I know who are the executive directors of these galleries friends, and that I know that if we needed to host something about art washing or gentrification in Chinatown, I can always reach out to them to have those types of conversations. And I think that is a model of any new business who comes in to be culturally aware, to be culturally respectful and not just sensitive to your surroundings, and really ask yourself, how can we be part of that neighborhood?
Yeah, as a quick final comment, if officials and representatives from West Bank are listening right now, can they be a part of the community? Do you have any message for them?
I think if they have listened to what we've had to say and read the letter and feel like they truly understand that what they're doing is harmful to communities, then perhaps there is an opportunity for an open conversation, given that it's real and genuine.
And also, Melody, before we go, I wanted to read a statement that West Bank made to Democracy Watch after after we requested an interview with them. So this is from their PR spokesperson. And I quote, during the fight for beauty exhibition, the responses we received were thoughtful and largely positive. However, we have also seen some opposition. We acknowledge that not all share our perspective of beauty and our idea of city building, but know that the frustrations they have expressed reflect, above all, a love for our city and a desire to help shape its future for the better, a goal we share. In the end, the work of city building is done together, and the responsibility of urban planning and all that it entails is everyone's to share. So we thank all who joined the conversation. End quote. Can you respond to that statement?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting statement, especially to our response. I think what is interesting is that they've actually extended their exhibit until February because of, quote unquote, apparently overwhelming response. But at the same time, what they're doing is just perpetuating a narrative that is harmful, that doesn't recognize, you know, alternatively, what has been happening on the ground in these communities and the harmful effects of their development activities and their practice of art washing. So the fact that they put out the statement and then subsequently also extends their exhibition, not providing equal opportunities for narrative, but as a way to perpetuate their own brand narratives that makes themselves look good with what they want to say, it's already a disingenuous, makes that statement disingenuous.
Yeah, totally. I think one thing that's interesting about the statement is the emphasis on togetherness and community. And I'm not sure, have we seen West Bank work collaboratively with any groups besides the city directly in their development projects, including the West Bank Fight for Beauty campaign? Are you aware of any collaboration?
In terms of collaboration with the community at large, personally, I'm not aware. They might come back and say, well, we've collaborated to XY said beneficiary that has benefited from their project, right, through their community amenity contribution. But what I see instead is that West Bank has found this formula where they just package up their buildings with this architect design, add some art, pass it through City Hall, the urban design panel, the city council, everybody looks at it and is wowed by the design, and it goes through without understanding what the effects and externalities these types of buildings could have. What I also find interesting is that I am aware that they are expanding into Toronto for Mervish Village. It used to be, like, I think, Honest Ed's, and that is turning into a large condo complex. From the news clippings that I've seen, it seems mostly positive, as if they're taking that extra step that they don't necessarily do in Vancouver to consult with community members. there are critics of that project too. I don't know anybody personally, but the media has mostly been positive, which is curious. And someone actually who knows a little bit more about that project said that it might have to do with the ward system in Toronto. Might be because Westbank is a newer company going into Toronto, so they have to make a good first impression. Whereas in Vancouver, they found this formula that could just allow them to essentially build what they want, right? So I would like to see more of that in Vancouver, not just by Westbank, but for all real estate developers. How can you really, truly consult with the community that you plan to be in?
Yeah, interesting, the comparison between Toronto and Vancouver, something to analyze further. That's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Melody. We've had on the show Melody Ma, an activist and the creator of a parody website to Westbank's Fight for Beauty campaign. You can check it out at therealfightforbeauty.ca. Melody's also a member of the City of Vancouver's Arts and Culture Policy Council, or formerly was. So that has been Democracy Watch for today, December 21st. Thank you so much for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. We will be back again next Thursday at 5 p.m. So tune in then.